He's the most wanted Irish man on earth, a boxing promoter turned drug lord living it up in the desert, a man with a billion-dollar cartel, a price on his head, and a passport that somehow still works. So how has Daniel Kinahan stayed free in Dubai while almost every other member of Europe's so-called super cartel has fallen? It's News Talk Daily, I'm Shane Beattie. A few years ago, Daniel Kinahan threw himself a wedding that would have made a sultan blush. The Burj Al Arab, gold chandeliers, thrones and a guest list that read like Interpol's nightmares. Since then, while gangland Ireland was torn apart by feud and bloodshed, Kinahan has lived in plain sight in Dubai. He's been spotted shopping in malls, dining with boxers and cutting deals in hotel lobbies. He's built what Europol calls a super cartel worth up to 20 billion euro a year, moving cocaine from South America to Europe. But despite US sanctions, a $5 million bounty and reams of police files, he's still a free man. Just this week, the Irish Criminal Asset Bureau revealed that it sold Daniel Kinahan's seized former Dublin mansion last year, setting a new record for the highest ever sale price achieved by CAB. Well, today on the podcast, we're talking to writer Ed Caesar, whose new investigation for The New Yorker lays bare Kinahan's rise from Dublin's flats to penthouses in the Emirates. Ed, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Pleasure to be with you.
Good to talk to you. Your piece opens in The New Yorker with this extraordinary image, a wedding in Burj Al Arab in Dubai. Would you mind describing that night for our listeners and who was at that famous wedding?
So this is a wonderful scene for any writer because everyone you want to know about is in this room together for this wedding. The Burj Al Arab is sort of absurdly luxurious. People call it the world's only seven-star hotel. You know, you can get yourself, you know, a turbot in the aquarium restaurant for like $300 or something. They sell a gold leaf cappuccino, all of that stuff. And at this wedding, Daniel Kinahan's marrying Keeper Robinson, fellow Dubliner, whose former husband was killed in a gangland hit a few years earlier. And they're sitting on thrones underneath chandeliers. There are criminals from all over the world in this room, including some of the most important cocaine traffickers. There at this wedding, Tyson Fury, the former heavyweight boxing champion of the world, is there. And so it's this mixture of kind of Dublin gangland, international cocaine, sports. You know, the center of it is Daniel Kinahan.
And there is footage from this wedding, isn't there?
I haven't seen the footage, but someone took footage because one of the guests was an informant for the DEA, the American agency. And I have been told by my sources that they took a video, which they shared with the DEA, which does exist somewhere.
Right, okay. In your piece, you also give us another incredible image, a different Burj, this time the Burj Khalifa, of Daniel taking business meetings in towers beside the Burj Khalifa, showing off offices for freight shipping, which means that he's quite open about his life in Dubai.
Yeah, there was a very strange bit of reporting. Someone told me that they've been for meetings about boxing, and you know, Daniel says, well, let me show you around the offices, you know, and they've got, you know, here's the room for boxing and here's the room for crypto and here's the room, oh, and here's our room for freight shipping. There are all these pictures of big shipping containers, and as anyone who knows anything about kind of international cocaine smuggling could tell you, that's how you get cocaine around the world. Now, I'm sure there was a legitimate excuse or reason given for those containers. The Kinahans have branched out into all these different types of legitimate companies, and there probably, you know, is a legitimate reason for having that business. But it just struck me as one of those moments where the licit and the illicit merge in this one moment.
And what's quite extraordinary is for anyone who's been on holiday to Dubai, I know it's known as a playground. I have been to Dubai myself. And in some ways, you know, you can see all the wealth and the luxury living, but you can also see that it's quite a restrictive place to live. I remember being in a nightclub in Dubai and this English couple were there and the guy put his hand on the small of his wife's back and security were straight over in 2 seconds to take the hand off his wife. in a nightclub. And then you think of the existence of the alleged drug dealers living there too, and how you can be quite open about living there as a drug dealer when it feels like everyone else is living quite a restrictive life.
It's a place full of contradictions. But I think what I came to realize is that particularly the European drug cartels, the people at the top of them, over time have realized, where is the most helpful place for me to live? For a while, that was Amsterdam. After that, for a while, it was the Costa del Sol. But recently, in the last decade or so, it's been Dubai. And there's a really good reason for that, because Dubai has been very slow to handle extradition requests. It's not interested particularly in organized crime unless it's touching the United Arab Emirates itself. They would say differently, but I think in practice you can see that they have not been quick to clamp down on organized crime. And also it has become a kind of money laundering hub for a lot of these big organized crime businesses. And that is the most important bit about running a major criminal empire. You have to be able to wash your money. And Dubai is a really, really helpful place to do that.
The Costa del Sol used to be known as a sunny place for shady people. Is that now Dubai?
Yeah, a sandy place for shady people, maybe now Dubai, yeah.
Now, the super cartel, you mentioned there the European gangs and the European cartels. The concept of a super cartel, where did that come from and who would be involved in that super cartel?
This idea comes from, it's a kind of a mixture of law enforcement and the media, but a lot of people who were at that wedding, including guys like Ridwan Taghi, who's a Dutch-Moroccan, Aydin Gachanin, who's Bosnian, a lot of these guys were working together from time to time to smuggle cocaine from South America to Europe. And law enforcement began to think of them as a network that was helping each other and scratching each other's backs and helping each other out on shipments. And this term, the super cartel, begins being used around that time, 2017. What's been really interesting for me, you know, I spent a few months on this story, is getting to understand that this super cartel is less of a solid structure than you might think. Right. So Europol thinks that this group of guys is responsible for about a third of Europe's cocaine trade for a long time, which is a massive amount of, you know, turnover every year. It's, you know, it's many billions every year. Some evidence that came through from one of the members of the super cartel, an Italian, Raffaele Imperiale, tells us that it was never a concrete organization. Their arrangements were fluid. They helped each other out on some deals. Then they went apart and did their own thing. And that to me seems a much more plausible understanding of how that network functioned.
But since the wedding, where many members of the super cartel attended, a lot of those have been extradited or imprisoned, yes?
Yes.
Almost all of them, bar really Daniel Kinahan.
That's right. The Kinahans, and we're talking here about his father, Christy, and his brother, Christy Kinahan Jr., they have not been arrested. They continue to be there. And it's a puzzle. And that's kind of why I started writing the piece, because it struck me as really interesting that in 2022, the Americans and the Irish law enforcement and various members of the State Department and so on got together for a big press conference at Dublin City Hall and put 5 million bounties on the heads of the three Kinahan men and said, we will bring them to justice wherever they are in the world. And 3 years later, they're still walking around. So that to me is very interesting. And there are a number of explanations as to why they're still walking around. But the first and the most important one starts in Ireland. You know, the Department for Prosecutions has not filed charges against Daniel Kinahan or his father or his brother. And until they do that, it's unlikely that the Emirati police are going to act.
But people felt that the involvement of the US with that 5 million bounty might have changed things, but it really hasn't.
No, it hasn't. And in fact, another really fascinating thing for me was that, you know, sources within the DEA say, like, people like the Kinahans are not top of our agenda anymore. You know, the Trump administration has much different priorities when it comes to the war on drugs. You know, when you look at what's happening in the US at the moment, they're thinking about fentanyl. They're thinking about small boats off the American coast. They're not thinking about Irish drug lords hanging out in Dubai operating, you know, mostly in Europe. That's not top of their priority. And so, yes, that, you know, the rewards still exist, that, you know, you can still claim the reward. The State Department would still pay out, I think. But in terms of their priorities, the Kinahans are nowhere near the top.
Does Daniel Kinahan still style himself as a legitimate boxing entrepreneur in Dubai?
No, I think that one's gone by the wayside since the sanctions came out. People have been running to distance themselves from him. He was certainly for a long time a real kingmaker in boxing. And it's just amazing to me that a massive American boxing company like Top Rank was dealing directly with Daniel Kinahan to set up, heavyweight championship of the world bouts. That is mind-blowing to me. Like they felt it was okay to do that.
But there was a time Tyson Fury would have thanked Daniel Kinahan publicly.
Yeah, he did it in 2020. He thanked him for, negotiating a 2-fight deal with Anthony Joshua. And, all of these moments are really, when you look back on it, and we know now what we know, it's astonishing that Tyson Fury thanked Daniel Kinahan publicly. And then I now understand that all came from Daniel Kinahan wanting his name out there. It was part of his attempt to kind of launder his reputation, that he would become a kind of legitimate boxing person.
Yeah. But speaking of his name out there, do we ever hear from Daniel Kinahan? Does he ever actually speak out, or do we ever hear his side of things?
He definitely didn't want to be interviewed by me. We tried a few times. I do know that he's read my piece because I got a text message from a proxy saying that he'd read it. So he's still reading his own press, but he hasn't popped his head above the parapet for a while. There's a little period of time where it seemed, like he wanted his picture taken with a lot of boxers. He wanted his face out there. He wanted to make it known that he was still, out and about. But I think he's now keeping a much lower profile.
He did have a propaganda film on YouTube, but I understand that was quickly taken down.
It was very quickly taken down. It's a really, really weird film. It's 15 minutes long, but it features a real director. It cost maybe 200,000 euros or so, so in that area. It's got proper actors. It's got a real script. I mean, it's cobblers. It doesn't make any sense. It's about this conspiracist rerunning of the Regency attacks. But he spent a lot of money getting it made. And it was taken down pretty quickly and was ultimately a waste of money. But it just shows you the lengths that he wanted to go to wash his own reputation.
And when we're talking about the sport of boxing, I'm wondering, does that sport lend itself to allegations of money laundering, or is it maybe a safer place for people to get up to activities like that?
Do you know what's funny is that every time I'd talk to someone about Kinahan's involvement in boxing, I'd say you guys all see, a lot of people in boxing are very nice and earn an honest living. And you'd say, why were you dealing with someone like Kinahan? And they said, in boxing, you can't be too choosy about who you deal with. The sport has a reputation for attracting people with slightly, gray area pasts at best. Since its inception, it's had links with organized crime. You can absolutely understand why it was attractive to someone like Kinahan.
Do we know, as best we can, how much the Kinahan family are worth?
Well, your police force cite a number which is 1.5 billion euros. I don't know exactly how they reached that figure, but you do see indications, for instance, that, the Sunday Times did a brilliant story about they got in touch with someone who had attempted to launder 200 million euros for the Kinahans recently. He was given 200 million and told to sort of get rid of it, wash it. And that's just one person operating in the Far East. So you think, that their money and their assets in property and in legitimate companies, some of it is spread all around the world. And, I find it plausible that they are worth certainly hundreds of millions of euros. The cocaine trade in Europe, is massive, and they were a huge part of it for a long time and continue to be.
And this was a realization that Irish crime journalists came to in recent years, is that this wasn't just a Dublin gang that had expanded a little bit. These were world players in the cocaine trade. And actually, I mean, it's quite extraordinary when you consider the humble Dublin beginnings. It's nearly impressive, were it not such a murky, illegal world, that you go from those humble beginnings to possibly worth over a billion.
Yeah, well, doing some of my reporting, obviously I came to Dublin a few times and, I had a little walk around the Oliver Bond flat complex where Daniel grew up. And, it's a humble beginning. And you think to, you know, to the Burj Khalifa, that is a pretty astonishing journey. So, and sometimes you think about, you know, not just the Kinahans, but a lot of these guys, you think, imagine what they could do if they put their considerable powers to use in a kind of legitimate arena, you know, it'd be like Steve Jobs or something. Yeah. You know, it's astonishing that you can build that kind of empire.
Also pretty astonishing from your article, the suggestion that the Kinahan network has links with Hezbollah and with Iranian intermediaries. I mean, it's, you wonder how deep do these ties go?
Yeah, that is crazy. But Hezbollah, for a long time, particularly in the 2010s, was the most significant figure in European cocaine trafficking. You know, they operated a lot of the money laundering. There were these operatives that were working out of the port of Rotterdam for Hezbollah. So if you wanted to be in cocaine in Europe in that period, you probably had to end up dealing with Hezbollah in some way, shape, or form. But, you know, the really crazy thing is that the links are so deep that law enforcement think that the Kinahans essentially conducted or helped Hezbollah to conduct assassinations, political assassinations. So they were friendly enough that those links really, you know, they weren't just business. You know, they were doing each other favors.
Does Dubai benefit from having people like Daniel Kinahan living there financially, status-wise? Is there any benefit to having these big players living there?
I don't think in terms of their status, it does them any good at all. And I think they were briefly on something called the Grey List, which is a financial action task force list of countries where they're not taking the anti-money laundering regulations seriously enough and so on. And they're now off that list. But their reputation is severely damaged, I think, by the presence of major criminals. They may not see it that way, but that is true. You know, I can't see what's in it for them. Even if there is, as people suggested to me, some kind of corrupt relationship, you know, money being paid to various authorities in order for criminals to be left alone, you can't imagine that it's worth it for Dubai to continue to have these people in and amongst them. And yet, there they still are. So it's difficult to know what's going through their heads. What I did learn from Justin Kelly, the Qadi commissioner, was that he seems encouraged by the fact that the Dubai police are now acting independently. That is to say that they are, you know, they're picking up major criminals without cajoling from European police forces. So it may be that the atmosphere there is changing now.
You've obviously spent months researching this piece for The New Yorker. Did anything surprise you about Daniel Kinahan? Actually, did anything even impress you about him?
Well, I don't find him to be an impressive person. I was surprised by the brazenness with which he wanted to put his name out there. That to me seemed crazy. I mean, there were little details, of course, that were always really surprising. You know, the wonderful thing about him having got a hair transplant recently, someone mentioned to me, and I thought that's a funny, you know, vain little thing to do. But yeah, there were just all these moments where he had a chance to go under the radar and chose not to, which really spoke to his personality. And I think even just after the piece came out, the idea that someone would let me know that he's read it, I think it just speaks to the ego of the man. So yeah, all of that was kind of surprising to me.
And just finally, where do you see this end? There was talk before that if they have to leave Dubai, the only other type of place they could live is, was it Afghanistan or somewhere like that? I'm just wondering, if Dubai turfs them out, where does Daniel Kinahan and family end up staying?
You do hear these stories, Iran maybe, or Russia. I like the idea of them going to Russia because there's like a whole bunch of people who can't live anywhere else who are currently living in, you know, Moscow, you know, like President Assad of Syria and so on. And you think of them all having like maybe a kind of exiles dinner party. But to be honest, they're not going anywhere until someone makes a move. And no one's making a move at the moment. So let's see what happens. The DPP in Ireland have two bundles of evidence. I'm told that there is some kind of decision coming relatively soon, but who knows whether that will actually happen. But until that happens, they don't have to move. So they don't have to make a decision.
Okay, well, it's a fascinating piece. Ed's article is entitled The Irishman. It's published in The New Yorker. Ed Caesar, thank you very much for joining me here on News Talk Daily. And that is it for the podcast for today. Thank you for your company. Don't forget you can listen back to this and every other edition on newstalk.com and on the Go Loud player. And I'll speak to you again tomorrow. Bye-bye for now.